This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston, a Beasley Broadcast Group station.
It's time for Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 AM. Yes, thanks for joining us on Tube Talk, WRCA, 1330 AM, another edition of the radio show that is dedicated to the antique radio collector, the music lover, and to the folks who still enjoy listening to the radio. Just a little announcement here we'd like to pass on. We're broadcasting from Boston, and anybody in the New England area, the New England Antique Radio Club is having a swap meet at the Westford Regency Hotel on Sunday, October 30th, from 8 to 12 noon. There will be no admission fee, so you can come on down. You do not have to pay to get in. There is plenty of free parking. And the Westford Regency also is well known in that area for having a great brunch. So come on down, check out the collectors, check out the antique radios, check out the folks who like to restore them, who still listen to them. Have some nice grub. It's a nice take, and it's in a very picturesque part of the state. So why don't you come on out and check it out. That was Henry Mancini and a little Peter Gunn. And Henry Mancini, strangely enough, got his start with the big band guys. He auditioned for Glenn Miller and his orchestra, and he actually played while he was in the Air Force during World War II. And he played a little bit for Tex Beneke when Tex Beneke was leading the Glenn Miller Orchestra after Glenn was, went missing after his fateful flight across the English Channel. So Mancini had his roots in that era, and then, off to Hollywood in the movie world, and as they say, the rest is history.
At words poetic, I'm so pathetic that I always have found it best, instead of getting them off my chest, to let them rest unexpressed. I hate parading my serenading, for I'll probably miss the bar. But if this city is not so pretty, at least it'll tell you how great you are. You're the top, you're Mahatma Gandhi, you're the top, you're Napoleon Brandy, you're the purple light of a summer night in Spain. You're the National Gallery, you're Gobble's salary, you're cellophane. You're sublime, you're a turkey dinner, you're the time of the Derby winner. I'm a toy balloon that's faded soon to pop, but a baby. I'm the bottom, you're the top. Of a lady and a gent. You're an old Dutch master, you're Mrs. Astor, you're Pepsodent. You're romance, you're the steps of Russia, you're the pan on a Roxy Usher. I'm a lazy lout that's just about to stop. Bottom baby, I'm the bottom, you're the
Ethel Merman from a 1934 recording, and every time I hear Ethel Merman, I think of the two reasons she was really put on this earth, which was number one, to sing that Cole Porter song, and then number two, to be Milton Berle's mother-in-law in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Put on your slumming clothes and get your car. Let's go sightseeing where the high-toned people are. Come on, there's lots of fun in store for you. See how the other half lives on Park Avenue. Let's go slumming. Take me slumming. Let's go slumming on Park Avenue. Let us hide behind a pair of fancy glasses and make faces when a member of the classes passes. Let's go smelling where they're dwelling, sniffing everything the way they do. Let us go to it, they do it, why can't we do it too? Let's go slumming, no slumming at Park Avenue. Take me slumming. Let's go slumming on Park Avenue. Let us hide behind a pair of fancy glasses and make faces when a member of the classes passes. Let's go smelling where they're dwelling, sniffing everything the way they do. Let us go to it, they do it, why can't we do it too? Let's go slumming, no slumming at Park Avenue.
That's Alice Faye from a 1937 recording with Cy Fear and his orchestra.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my man and I ain't together. keeps raining all the time. Life is bare, gloom and misery everywhere, stormy weather. Just can't get my poor self together. I'm weary all the time, the time. So weary all the time. Since he went away, the blues walked in and met me. If he stays away, oh, and chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. Can't go on, everything I had is gone. Stormy weather since my together keeps raining all the time, keeps raining all the time. I walk around heavy-hearted and sad. Night comes around and I'm still feeling bad. Rain pouring down, blind in every hope I had. This pittering, pattering, beating and spattering drives me mad. Love, 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 love. This misery is just too much for me. Can't go on. Everything I had is gone. Stormy weather since my together keeps raining all the time, keeps raining all the time.
Lena Horne, a true legend. We are joined this week on Tube Talk by Mark Opat from the Michigan Antique Radio Club, also owner and proprietor of Old Radio Parts. Is that the official name of your business, Mark?
Yeah. Actually, my company's called Antique Audio, and you pronounce my name Opat.
Mr. Opat.
Yes.
I'm with you now. And Mark is media director for the Michigan Antique Radio Club, and we're very pleased to have you on tonight. Thanks for taking some time to be with us. If you could, just give our audience a little overview of the Michigan Club. I know it's a very active club. I know you have a big annual event. And what else should we know about the Michigan Antique Radio Club, Mark?
Well, it was founded in 1984-85, and I was one of the original, not the very original member, one of the earliest members. And we have typically over 600 members that include Michigan and the entire United States, including Canada and a couple of few foreign countries. We have four swap meets a year, and our largest one is in Lansing, Michigan in July, and that's one of the largest in the entire United States, if not the largest, for antique radio collectors.
Well, it sounds like a very healthy club. How would you rate the state of the hobby up your way as far as attracting younger folks or newer collectors? Do you still have some new people coming in the door, or is it...
We do. I, I think, you know, due to the economy, it's tapered off a little bit, I think, and but there seems to be more and more interest in the tube type audio gear. That area seems to be growing even more. But vintage radio collecting and restoring is extremely popular still, and we see a lot of we do see some new people coming into it currently.
Well, it's very good to hear up there, and that's another one of the reasons that this show exists, is to support that and to hopefully build some interest. And you know, I've always thought that it would make sense for the antique radio community to have some type of a voice or a presence on the air, which is one of the reasons that we even do this show. And Mark, maybe you could just give us a little background on yourself. When did you first get interested in radio? How did you get started? Maybe you can give us a little idea.
When I was just a kid, about probably 12, 13 years old. At first, when I was just very young, maybe 5, 6 years old, I somehow took an interest in old cars. I guess that all came about because I had a pedal car as a kid that was sort of shaped like a 1952 Buick, and you might remember those Murray pedal cars.
Oh yeah, and they had the fire engines with the bells too. I think
was
another Murray.
Yeah, they had those too. Yeah, and this, you know, I was born 1956, so. The car that I had was a hand-me-down from my older cousin, and so mine looked like a 52 Buick, and everybody else's at that time looked like a sort of like a 1959 Ford, and so I thought mine was cool because it was different from all the others that I saw on the block, and it just got me interested in old cars. Well, that I became a bit fanatical about that. I built a lot of model cars and had a subscription to Hemmings Motor News when I was probably 11 or 12 years old. And then when I got into high school, or even before high school, I had some interest in electronics. And one of my uncles or one of my aunts gave me an old radio to play with, and it just kind of started off right there. Well, then when I got into high school, I took electronics class, and wouldn't you know, somebody had donated a couple of old radios to the school, and they were sitting in the inside the storage parts of our workbenches, and I pulled them out, and one of them was a Philco Model 20, and the other was, oddly enough, an RCA Model 20. So two Model 20 radios, they're very different from each other. One's a battery-powered radio from the 1920s, and the other was a chassis from a cathedral radio from about 1930. And I started to work with those, and then I bought a small collection of vintage radios from a guy who was a ham radio guy that was moving out of the area. I bought about 10 or 12 radios, I think, for $50 at the time. This is about 1972. And it just took off from there, and then I started fixing them for people. I had some cards printed up when I was a senior in high school, and
very entrepreneurial.
And
I
put them up on bulletin boards, and people started calling me, and I started charging money for fixing things, and it just took off. And all through college, I did it, and then all the way into my adult life, and then I turned it into an actual business in the late 80s. So
very cool.
Just grown from there.
Very cool. Do you have a favorite manufacturer, or is there one you favor over another, or do you have in your collection more of one? Are you a Zenith guy or a Philco guy?
I'm not particularly a brand collector like some people are, but I do have a little bit of a fondness for the Silvertone brand, which was Sears for a couple years in the 30s. They made some very nice looking and performing radios with big big gold dials on them that were very Art Deco, very artistically designed. And so that, I guess if anything, that's a little bit of a brand specialty that I have. But overall, no, I'm not a brand specialist at all.
Well, this kind of ties in because you were kind enough to send me a few things you thought would be good topics, and we have some really good ones here. This kind of leads into one of the questions that I was going to ask you anyway, is did you have a story behind a particularly good find of an antique radio, and you came back and said, well, not only was it just one radio, but you had a good story about a find, about a whole bunch of radios and some collateral material as well. Maybe you could share that with us.
Well, it is a funny story in a way because So, you know, it's funny how things just fall into your lap sometimes by happenstance.
Uh-huh.
I go down to a radio swap meet in Charlotte, North Carolina every March. It's hosted by the Carolina chapter of the Antique Wireless Association. And my wife and I have been going to that now since about 1993, and we sell capacitors and knobs and parts and things down there. It's a great club, and they do a real nice job. And it's a little bit of a vacation for us. So on the way down and on the way back, we typically stop off at antique stops and small towns and things and just look around. And we happen to be coming back from that show, I believe. This was about 12 years ago. And we're traveling along and saw an antique mall and pulled in there. And my wife was driving, and she pulled in, and there was a little bit of a ditch in front of this place, and she kind of hit it a little bit hard. And we didn't think too much about it until we pulled out of there, and the tailpipe just broke in half when we were leaving. And so the car was making a loud, loud noise, and the tailpipe was dragging in the forward position, you know, the way that if it catches a big groove in the road, you know, it's going to tear itself off. So we pulled off the road as soon as we could at what appeared to be a muffler shop, and this place, and this is, you know, we're in a little bit in the rural sticks area, you know, there's not a lot of
sure.
businesses around. And this place happened to be closed. It had a sign on the door that said, you know, back in an hour, and it looked like that sign had been there for months. So at
this
least
could be the
I
longest car trip we ever took, honey.
Yes, exactly. So luckily I know that any muffler shop, if you look around in the weeds, you'll find some baling wire. And sure enough, there was. And so I managed to bale it up, but it was still loud as all heck. And we're going down the road a little further, and there, and this was getting to be later in the afternoon, you know, right at the end of the day,
sure.
Business day. So we get to another town, and there's a muffler shop, and the lady says, well, we're closed up now, but there's another one up the street. Go there. So we go up there, and the guy's just, you know, he's hanging up his hoses. He's about done for the day. He says, pull in here. I'll get you fixed up. I know you're traveling and you need help. So he gets us in there, and he says, I'll put a sleeve on it. It costs you $15. I said, oh, my God. I said, I'll pay you $50. He said, no, $15 is fine. I said, okay.
Yeah, that's the guy you always hope you run into somebody like that, you know,
you
when
bet.
You have a problem.
So,
you got it.
So we're sitting there waiting in this in his waiting area, and there's another man there, an older man. And he says, I used to own this business. He says, I sold it to the other guy here, and I just kind of hang around and, you know, socialize. I'm retired, so I don't have a lot to do, and I help him out with the, you know, handling the customers and stuff. And he said, so what you doing? And I said, well, we're traveling, and we went to this antique radio convention in Charlotte. He says, you're kidding me. I said, no. He says, you mean there's people that collect radios? I said, yes. He said, well, I have to tell you, there's about 150 of them back at my house. I said, why do you have 150 radios? He said, well, said I my wife, her ex-husband had collected them, and put them all around the house. They're on display. They're up on these shelves. They're all over the place. And she's been looking to sell a whole bunch of this stuff off. And would you like to come over and look? And I said, well, sure, as soon as we get this tailpipe fixed, you know.
The stars were aligned, you know, for that one to happen, huh?
Yeah, and the usual thing when I meet somebody like that is that it turns out that they're all a bunch of clock radios, you know, and
sure.
nothing very good for a sophisticated radio collector. And he didn't know a thing about him. I said, can you describe him? He said, well, this, that, and the other thing. And sounded kind of good, but, you know, he wasn't a collector at all, didn't understand what they were. So he said, well, I live about 8 miles down the road. You just follow me. So we get in the car, we follow him. And we're in the hills of, I think it was southern Tennessee. So we're, you know, like winding up these little narrow roads. And, you know,
sure.
you think you're going to go to a logging camp the
yeah,
way
you're,
we're
you're wondering if he's going to meet you at the door with his chainsaw, with his brother Earl, and that's the last trip you ever took.
It was a little bit. Well, he was a very nice old gentleman. I wasn't afraid of that. I followed a lot of people in my car in my life to some places you wouldn't believe. In fact, I can tell you some stories about Detroit that would curl your hair. But anyway, so we get up there, and it's a nice old house. It's not old, but a beautiful kind of 50s, 60s, more modern home. up on top of this bluff that's been cleared on top of a mountain. And, boy, you could just see everywhere from up there. It was just gorgeous views and everything. And we go inside and meet his wife. And she says, well, let me show you the room. And we go off to the living room. And sure enough, around the whole living room, there's a shelf near the top. And it's just lined with radios all the way around. And there were others standing on the floor and everything. It's just like a real nice radio collection. And, you know, she wanted to sell anything out of it, so I did end up picking some things out. And one of the nice things was is that radio collectors often are, like myself, we're looking for the more unusual stuff
sure.
that you don't find every day.
Right. You're trying to fill a hole in your collection or something you've been looking for a long time or...
Kinds of things that weren't sold to the general public usually, such as signs from radio repair shops,
sure.
and, service manuals, and things of that nature. So he had at one time managed to find some antique shop, and he had cleaned it out. And so he did have some beautiful enameled signs, you know, from the 40s and 30s, which is very hard to find, you know.
That's a good story. That's great stuff too, you know. And it's and you know you happen across it like that, and you probably can get a pretty good price for it too. Whereas, you know, you find it in the antique store, and they see you come in. You know, I got some bargaining to do here. I might get taken advantage of.
Well, you know, with antique stores, you can either go way high or way low. They are very seldom are they right on target on price. They really don't know.
I have a friend down in lives down in Wilmington, Delaware, and. He's been collecting for years and years, and he has a little website and has a pretty hefty collection. And, you know, so he had something that I wanted to get off him, and I asked him where he found the thing, and he said, well, you know, I had a once-in-a-lifetime thing happen to me. I said, well, tell me, you know, fill me in. So apparently there's a guy who lived, an older gentleman, not too far from him, that knew this fellow was interested in radios, and they bumped into each other one day outside, and the guy goes, well, you know, if you're ever interested in some radios, you know, I have some at the house, so... My friend Jeffrey says, well, here's my card. You know, if you ever want to get rid of them or, you know, you want to sell some, you know, give me a call. I'll come by. So long story short, you know, he never hears from this fellow. Several years later, he gets a call from this guy's kids. They had found his card. Apparently, their dad had mentioned Jeffrey to him. And they said, oh, yeah, you know, our dad once mentioned he had some radios. Would you want to come up the house? He just passed away, and there's some radios here if you'd like to look. So what does he do? He said, jump in the car, and up he goes. Well, you know, not only the guy was a collector, it was borderline hoarding. And he goes, the living room, the dining room, the kitchen, the basement was all parts, tubes, chassis that had been pulled out of radios. He said, I filled the Jeep Cherokee 8 times coming home. He's an unbelievable stash. And I did snag one of them that he got out of it. But he goes, you know, and I came home and I thought it was all said and done, and that's never going to happen to me. That's the highlight of my collecting career. It'll never happen again. Phone rings again. Oh, we were down in the crawl space and up in the attic, and we have a couple hundred more. If you're interested.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you could scour swap meets and stores, and you could beat your brains out looking for stuff, and, you know, you get a phone call, and here it is. It's just great stuff.
The real unusual thing about my find was that it was down south, and over the years, I figured out that there's a radio belt in the United States, and I call it the radio belt. It runs from Illinois to the East Coast, everywhere north of Kentucky. And you go anywhere in the United States outside of that, and vintage radios are much scarcer.
Now, that's interesting that you mentioned that. And, you know, when I saw that little note you had made, I made a mental note. I said, I got to ask him about that. Now, why do you think that might be, that way down in the deep south you just don't find that much stuff?
Well, there's a lot of good reasons for it. Think about the 1930s. First of all, their population density was much
right.
less. Second of all, their income level was much, much less. And thirdly, their electrification was
right.
very...
Right, rural electrification. Very Tennessee little. Valley Authority was just a dream. Yep.
Yeah. So to have a radio on the farm, which they did make farm radios
right.
specifically
battery
for
sets,
the farm,
yep.
and they were powered by batteries, but batteries were not cheap.
Yep, they're expensive.
So you had to be a person of some means
mm-hmm.
to have a vintage radio. That's why the whole thing about the Waltons TV show is unusual. And if you're a radio collector, you're familiar with a Zenith model that everybody calls the Walton.
Because it was in the show, and that's where they get
radio,
the war news and all,
Yeah, and they really picked the wrong thing for that show. The prop master, whoever it was in California, where they were doing the show, just picked something out, and boy, did he pick the wrong thing, because it was the radio they picked out was a very substantial radio made by Zenith. It was a very higher-end model.
Fairly expensive at retail, I'm sure, in its day.
At that time, it would have been way out of their range, you know, to purchase. And most the vast majority of those radios, including the one that is the prop, were AC-powered. And so those folks there, I'm not even sure if the storyline indicated that they had AC power at their farm. So it really wasn't the right thing. It's turned into a legend, of course, with radio collectors, and they love the radio because it is a, even if it hadn't been on the radio that on the Walton's TV show, it would have still been.
It's a good-looking, fine-performing set, and Zenith made good stuff in that era, too. So it's desirable
Zenith
for
did.
Collectors, and I
Zenith
think the TV show... really
by
pushed
far
it
and
up.
Away, Zenith is the most popular radio collector's brand. Probably second would be Philco because they're extremely common. But the Zenith radios have a very pretty dial that collectors like.
Oh, they like the big black dial, yeah.
Yes, the big black dial that they had. It was about eight inches in diameter, and some of them are even more than that. And they had translucent plastic on a lot of them where they would light up in different colors. When you turned on the radio, the pilot lights would shine through the back, from the back to the front, and really was a very pretty radio to look at.
You're in a nice darkened room. You know, if you think about it, though, as you're talking about you enjoy Silvertone, probably would have made more sense for the Waltons, who were farmers, who probably did shop the Sears Roebuck catalog, to have a Silvertone farm set somewhere with a customized windmill setup that they also could have easily gotten out of that Silvertone catalog to charge the batteries to run the set.
Or Zenith made those as well. They had Zenith battery-powered radios were very popular, and even more so would have been Philco. Philco sold a lot of more economical sets, and not exclusively, of course. Philco was a wide-line manufacturer, just like Zenith and the others, but they made some sets that were very affordable that ran on batteries, so would have been a much better pick for them.
And Zenith also, I think, Commander McDonald was very keen on the whole wind thing. He picked up, did they buy the Wind Charger company? And
the
that
wind,
was their...
Wind Charger, yes. It
that was
a windmill
thing.
That had an electric generator on it.
That's pretty cool stuff. And, you know, one of the other things you had mentioned to me, talk a little bit about, just to back up, you know, what is really wrong when you find in an old radio somewhere at either an antique store or a find at a nice old guy's house like you did? And I always try to caution folks who are new to the hobby or just interested in getting into it. You know, you find something that's 60, 70, 80 years old, hasn't been plugged in at a dog's age.
Right.
Don't plug it in. Get it checked out. You could hurt yourself. You could hurt the device. But you were talking a little bit about, well, what really is wrong, you know?
That's the thing is that 95% of the calls that I get from people that have an old radio say that they just found it in their you know, their families.
Up in the attic, down out in the garage.
Yeah, in the estate or something like that. Or they got it some time ago and they want to get it repaired. And they always say, well, I think it's just a tube. And that's the words that come out of everybody's mouth that is familiar with radios at all at that time. They
must
they
be
know
a tube.
About tubes, which, of course, today, you know, if we talk about tubes, maybe a lot of your listeners maybe have never even heard of a tube. They don't know what that is. And, of course, we know that it's a glass envelope with pins on the bottom that had metal parts inside that heated up and conducted electrons and made the radio amplify. You know, people today are, of quite unfamiliar with this, you know.
Well, we've been down this road a little bit before on the show. We had a fellow on who's a real radio. He loves to restore. I don't think he really he listens, but I think he has more fun restoring than he does actually listening. And we've had this similar conversation. And, you know, one of the reasons that we here on Tube Talk, of course, given the name of the show, right, we admire the vacuum tube so much is usually it's not the tube. The tubes are probably the least of your worries, and you've certainly restored a lot of stuff. You pull out the tubes and test them. This is a really good chance that, especially if some of them have been replaced, they're going to test pretty strong. Well, and you're going to have to look for capacitors or resistors or wiring issues.
Of course, I was going to get to capacitors, but the first thing I was going to say about tubes is that you're right. Most of them, when a radio comes in the door here, a typical radio has maybe 7 or 8 tubes in it. And at least the console types or the slightly larger table models. And, you know, it's not that unusual for all of them to be still fine or maybe to have 1 or 2 that should be replaced out of the 7. But the situation with almost everything that comes in the door is the capacitors are bad.
Yep.
And capacitors are solder-in parts that come in many different kinds of values, sizes, and shapes. And the fortunate thing today is they're extremely cheap to buy. I do probably 85% of my business in parts today is selling capacitors to people who restore radios. But they're extremely cheap. They're all available, or at least the modern equivalent of the old ones. And the even better thing is that the ones made today are way more reliable than they were.
Probably be the last time you do it when you replace it.
Yes. If you we call it recapping a radio, and when you recap something today, that's probably the last time it's going to have to be done for who knows how long. You know, certainly the one type of capacitor, there's two basic types in old radios that we replace usually are electrolytic capacitors, and the other types used to be called paper capacitors. Today they're called Mylar capacitors. And you know, the Mylar capacitors will probably last forever. They'll never have to be replaced. The electrolytics, well, they may have to be replaced at some point in time, but it's going to be a long, long time after you and I are well rotted away.
Yeah, well, it's not in our lifetimes. And, you know, this kind of segues into one of the other things you had thrown out that you'd like to go over. You know, once you have replaced your capacitors, and if you've had some faulty wiring that might need to be redone or a power cord, and, you know, you've brought this thing back to, you know, safe operation and you know, reasonably close to its original design, you know, what can you expect as far as performance and sound? And that's a very open-ended question. We could go on about that for a long time, but my simple answer would be a lot of people would be very surprised just how good they did sound. They're certainly going to sound different than what you listen to today.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right about that. Most of these radios were very good receivers. And now the thing we have to mention, of course, is that the vast majority of these are AM radios and AM with shortwave, but not FM. FM came along beginning after World War II primarily. So if your radio was made before World War II, which is 1942 to 1945 roughly, then you have a radio that only will receive AM and shortwave. And shortwave was extremely popular at that time too. We can talk about that as well. But if you're listening to anything on AM radio today, you cannot beat these radios in most cases for performance. They're just fantastic. They sound good. Their reception quality is great. Not everyone, of course, is a great radio, but I would say that you know, a good 80 to 90% of them are far, far better AM radios than most anybody today has had the experience of using.
I think the term that I've heard a lot of the old-timers use with a lot of the stuff that you get today, you know, at a department store or Walmart or whatever, deaf as a post. Can't pick anything up on that radio. Yep. You need a real radio.
especially after 1970, pretty much everything after that is an AM radio is not of any good quality at all.
Well, you know, we're fortunate up here in the greater Boston area, not only this station here, where let's remind people you're listening to Tube Talk, and this is the apex of independently produced good radio programming. We're not too shy about promoting ourselves, but we play music here. This station, WRCA, plays music, especially in the overnights. They play a lot of nice music, and we have a station that's dedicated. All the guy does, he's only 250 watts, but he's in the Boston area. Does most of Metro Boston. You can pick him up, and all he does is music. And when you tune in, a nice old set, and you're listening to the music, it is so soothing and relaxing, and you really get an appreciation for just how good these vintage electronics sound, and does it sound different? It certainly does.
Right.
Is it the same as your stereo or your Bose? It isn't, but you know what? Sometimes I'd tell you I'd actually find it nicer to listen to, and it's also kind of neat as a collector because different sets have different sounds, you know. So
they do.
It makes it very fun. It makes it very enjoyable when you can still pick up some music. I don't know what you have out your way as far as music stations on AM.
We have on AM in the Detroit area where I'm located. We do still have a couple of music stations. One is primarily country, and it comes from Canada, Windsor, actually. But
good for
them. It's great if you have some local AM stations, and also. Here in the Detroit area with my vintage radios, I can pick up WSM. I believe it is out of Nashville, Tennessee.
650 AM.
650 AM.
The Air Castle of the South.
The Grand Ole Opry.
That's it, brother.
On there every Friday and Saturday night. And it's just like the old days. You know, you can sit by your old Philco and you can listen to the Grand Ole Opry today.
Hey, I got a question for you. How do you guys pick up your way 7:40 a.m. out of Toronto? Zoom radio.
We can get it here at night, and that's a great, great station.
Because I pick that up down here, especially in the fall and winter, and very fond of the old-time radio shows. And some of the music, it's actually on the same frequency as the fellow who has the low power AM station, and you know, being directional, you know, you can kind of turn your set around and you pick up Toronto better than you pick up the one up in Boston. But that's a great station.
When you say turn your set around, you're referring to a radio that has a loop antenna.
That is correct.
Most vintage radios use a long wire antenna, which today when I do a customer's radio, I give them 6 or 8 feet of wire on the back, and that does just fine for 90% of their listening purposes. So
I have a weakness.
Right.
I have a weakness. I'll confess. I have a weakness for RCA radios, 1946, 1947, six-tube sets with an internal antenna, and a couple of different reasons. One is I don't have an awful lot of room, so I can move them around my house. I can bring them to different rooms, and surprisingly good reception that I pick up. And some of the speakers are quite nice. So it's not, as I have a big Carlson, a big Stromberg Carlson down in my dining room, and I just can't listen to that up in the bedroom at night. So, I like the little ones that you could bring around. And again, they're surprisingly good considering what you buy commercially today on the market, even though they don't quite match up with some of the higher tube count stuff from the
30s. I'm glad to hear that that you're onto the RCA brand because that was a very high quality brand they had. They had probably the best paid engineers in the business. And as engineering goes, the RCA and the GE brand vintage radios are just fantastic. They aren't overall as popular with collectors because most of their dials on their radios weren't as sexy as the Zenith radios were. But I'll tell you what, if you want bang for your buck, I always tell people the RCA brand is one of them out there that you can pick up for a lot less money than the Zenith, and you're going to get way better performance, or at least the same for way less money.
Here, I have a little blurb here I wrote up. I have a 66X3, which is, I think, a 1946. It's a six-tube version. And the guy who is, has this on his site, he's very fond of them too. And he goes, extra RF amplifier tube, IF frequency trap at the antenna input, two bands, adjustable patterns on both bands for accurate calibration across the dial. Way to go, RCA. And, well, that loses me a little bit because I'm not a super technical guy. I said, gee, you know, maybe this is a little better than I thought it was. And actually, it is one of my better performing sets, even, you know, yep. for a low tube count AC/DC.
Yep.
And you put a long wire antenna on that thing, and it's a very good little short wave set. It's kind of a fun set to have around the house. So
there's a lot of great vintage radios out there, and we'd love to see people bring these out, get them restored. Those little table radios are not hard to restore usually. And the parts, like I said, internal parts are inexpensive and usually easy. Mostly capacitors is what we're dealing with.
And they're so pretty to look at, and they're a nice piece of furniture if you get a nice wood one to sit around. And even some of the Bakelite cases are pretty snappy. Some of them were, you know, very unique designs. You know, the Catalin stuff, we've talked a little bit about Catalin before on the show. If you're a real collector, maybe you're willing to lay out the money for it, but it's certainly a very, you know, unique and attractive looking piece to have. But even if you were to find something that's just a nice sharp looking wood radio, it's a nice conversation piece, and especially if they work, because people always seem to be attracted to that stuff, and I'm not quite sure what it is. Everybody gets a little nostalgic about certain things, and maybe it's they remember it from their parents or their grandparents. And, you know, one other thing you had mentioned to me, Mark, and you know, we're going to be victims here of time, so we're going to have to get close to wrapping things up here, but you were talking a little bit about what does the collector want today, what's hot, what's not. Maybe you can give us a read on what is really highly sought after right now that you see.
Well, as I mentioned, the Zenith brand is the most popular, at least for radios of the 1930s. So collectors love those big black dial Zeniths, either the table models or the consoles, but primarily the table radios are the biggest sellers because, you know, folks have more they can put more of them in their home than they can consoles. It doesn't take very long collecting consoles to fill up a room.
I know.
Actually, a friend of mine had 30 of them in one of his rooms one time. So he was a pretty good collector.
Was he a hoarder? Is he another one of these guys?
He was close for a while there, but he never got to be hoarder status. But I'll tell you what, he built up a fantastic collection. But the Zenith brand is hot with collectors. Anything with a big round dial on it that lights up is usually pretty popular. Anything in the tombstone style of cabinet, and that's a tombstone, we'll explain to your listeners, is a tall table radio, and there's basically three types of table radios in general, maybe four that we can talk about generic styles. And the generic styles are tombstones, which are generally a flat top radio or something with a relatively flat top that's a tall radio. They can be up to two feet high standing on the table. Then you have cathedrals, which have the arch top, which is primarily Philco, was the main manufacturer of those. And then you had your horizontal table radios, which were wider than they are tall. And then you had your midget radios, which were very much more smaller radios, typically what we call All-American 5 types. And they started coming out around 1933 or 34. And those are the different styles. But the colorful, the colorful cabinet plastic radios, they can, you know, you mentioned Catalin. There's many other types of plastic that were developed from that point on. In fact, let me put a plug in for the Michigan Antique Radio Club here.
You certainly go right ahead.
In July, we always have a theme for our extravaganza event in Michigan. And by the way, the Michigan Antique Radio Club's website is michiganantiqueradio.org. The theme that we're going to have for next year's event is going to be called Bakelite and Beyond. And those of us who are radio collectors know that Bakelite was the very first plastic, basically, or non-wood type material that was invented. It was invented around 1909 by Leo Bakeland. And from that point on, other companies came along and started developing other plastics, primarily in the 1930s, and then it exploded in the 40s and 50s. But we're going to be featuring radios in our contest that will be beginning with Bakelite, anything with Bakelite on it, and then all the other plastics that went after that. So you know, Plascon and Beetle Plastic and Catalin and all these different things. Many of them, of course, were trademarked names. Fiberloid was another one, and these were all plastics that were developed after Bakelite. So that'll be a lot of fun. But
hey, Mark, and you know why
collectors do like plastic too.
While you were on the topic of URLs and web addresses, if anybody was in need of some parts or wanted to check out your site, you are at what's your official web address?
Oldradioparts.net.
Oldradioparts.net, and that's if you'd like to find capacitors, maybe some dials. I know you do some dial work.
I do make some dials for radios, and that's the other thing we should mention real quickly is that people always ask about tubes being available for these radios. They're extremely common. Tubes are generally not a problem, but cosmetic parts are the most difficult parts for us to get. And you know this as a collector, that anything on the outside of a radio, like a plastic script on a 50s radio or a knob that had a brass part that fell off, those are the parts that are made of what we say unobtainium.
Right.
They are parts that are very, very difficult to find, especially when you get into the 1950s when they started putting little metal stamped parts or little plastic parts on these radios. So any cosmetic part on the outside of your radio, very, very difficult to get. But
Mark, you know what else is difficult for us to get is time, and we're going to have to wrap for this one. Thanks awful lot for being with us tonight, and we'll talk with you real soon.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
Bye.
Scott Joplin, Maple Leaf Rag. We'd love to hear from you here at Tube Talk. We have an email address set up for the show. It's tubetalk1@gmail.com. TUBETALK, the number 1, at gmail.com.
that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down. Never flirt with a girl named Tess down old Texas way. Cause if you do, I'm telling you, here's what you have to say. Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down.
Flying in the air corps, flying to a fair. There's a flying fortress with a knocked out name.
Pistol packing mama, hear the airmen say. Pistol packing mama, lay those bombs away.
Why, just the other morning, the CO walked on in. Then the CO told us that we would bomb Berlin.
Pistol packing mama, spread your wings and flap. Lay those bombs away, babe. Right in Hitler's lap.
Oh, then we boarded Mama, and Mama took us high in the wild blue yonder, high into the sky.
Pistol packing Mama, see that land below. Pistol packing Mama, let your pistols go.
And spin that turret, Mama, spit them bullets clean. Shake them old engines and shake that old machine.
Push aside that agate, lay it on the line. Pistol packing Mama, you're doing fine.
Well, now the job is done, babe, baby, take a bow. We'll be back tomorrow, but let's go home for now.
Lay those bombs away, babe, lay those bombs away. Pistol packing mama, lay those bombs away.
Thanks for listening to Tube Talk tonight.
Opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management.